Welcome to the Couch Potatoes. I'm Brett McGarry. This week I've got a tale of two shows to share with you. One of them, good. The other, not quite.
I'm Jeff Braun. One of the Farrelly brothers has a pretty funny new movie out, and maybe the funniest movie of all time celebrates an anniversary. Plus,
it is a busy weekend at the movies. Five new films this weekend, although you'd think there should be six, but one of them is missing.
But first, award season has finally ended, capping it off with Al Pacino's bonkers reading of the Best Picture winner at the Oscars last weekend.
Only one will take the award for Best Picture. And I have to go to the envelope for that. And I will. Here it comes. And my eyes see Oppenheimer. Yes.
Weirdly anticlimactic. I think we were all expecting him or somebody to read the list of nominees. Pacino said that was never a part of the plan. The producers just said, just get to the point. So he did. And as expected, Oppenheimer won Best Picture. Christopher Nolan won Best Director. The movie won 7 Oscars. Not a clean sweep by any stretch, but it did win more than anything else. Poor Things won 4 Oscars, and a bunch of others won 1 or 2. So overall, 19.5 million people watching it, which is nowhere near the heights that show has hit before. It's, I think I read, 4th lowest, but it is up 4% from last year. So that was that. The Oscars, I thought it was actually a really good one this year. Sometimes the show sucks, but this year it seemed to flow pretty well, thanks in part to Jimmy Kimmel and a lot of comedy bits that actually really worked and some really good pacing. Some of the highlights I thought obviously was Ryan Gosling's I'm Just Ken performance, a big lavish musical number that also featured Slash from Guns N' Roses and Eddie Van Halen's son Wolfgang, and a lot of other funny stuff. John Cena, I think, maybe got the best laughs when he did his naked bit. And then I think, Brett, my favorite part absolutely was Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito doing their twins bit and this Batman bit that they did with Michael Keaton in the audience. And Schwarzenegger kept calling him a son of a bitch, which I thought was really weird. So I just enjoyed that. And there are some other funny bits, which helps. So many times the funny bits just don't land for me, but this year I think they did. A couple of the things I did not care for we were talking about John Williams last weekend. He didn't even get a mention. I thought even if he wasn't going to win, someone was going to say, you know, hey, by the way, he's here. And how about a round of applause for John Williams is retiring now, but nope, nothing like that. And Martin Scorsese goes 0 for 10 again. His last movie, The Irishman, went 0 for 10. His movie, The Gangs of New York, went 0 for 10 20 years ago. For a guy that most people say is one of the greatest living filmmakers of all time, they sure don't like to give his movies Academy Awards, so he's blanked again. And then the Al Pacino at the end, it was just it's very Al Pacino, but I thought, you know what, maybe get somebody to read out the name of this that actually feels the importance of the moment, and we'll do it with a little bit of gusto and not this weird disheveled Pacino reading. But that was that. Overall, I thought it was a pretty good Oscars for an exhausting end to award season. What do you think?
Well, and I was, I think my initial assessment of the Oscars awards show was, I don't know if it was unfair or perhaps a snap reaction that was linked to the length of the Oscars season, even though I didn't watch any of these movies. We used to both watch as many Best Picture nominees as possible, but over the years it's kind of become like your thing, and yeah. I just stay out of your way. So it wasn't a conscious decision. I just didn't happen to see. I meant to watch Barbie, still haven't watched it. It's on Crave. I've been meaning to watch Oppenheimer, haven't gotten to it yet. It's on Prime.
Most of them are on Prime.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. So I just happened to not see any of the nominees. But even with that, I just found this particular campaign really exhausting. And maybe it's because the campaign really started. Normally it starts in the late fall, yeah, right? Like in November. But I think this one really started in July when Oppenheimer, that weekend.
Absolutely. And it was sort of a foregone conclusion since then. It's like, oh, that is the movie to beat. And nothing really came close to, you know, matching it, or it's like, ooh, we got a real race here or anything. It was just a foregone conclusion. Oppenheimer's going to win the big ones.
I thought Jimmy Kimmel was just fine, although I see here, according to ABC's Jason Nathanson, that Jimmy Kimmel might have ruffled some feathers as a host.
The Oscars mostly stayed away from politics until the end, when host Jimmy Kimmel came on stage and read a review from former President Donald Trump that he'd posted on Truth Social.
His opening was that of a less than average person trying too hard to be something which he is not and never can be. Get rid of Kimmel and perhaps replace him with another washed-up but cheap ABC talent, George Sloppenopoulos.
Kimmel seemed to enjoy the digs, adding,
"Thank you for watching. I'm surprised you're still... Isn't it past your jail time?"
We'll see what the ratings are later on Monday. Backstage at the Oscars, Jason Nathanson, ABC News, Hollywood.
And as Jeff said, the ratings were 19.5 million. That report came out early on Monday. I enjoyed the joke. I liked the joke. And he only read it because it started late. It started a few minutes late because there were some protests outside. And then it was scheduled to go for 3.5 hours. And it actually succeeded to the point where they were ahead of time.
They had a fill time. Well, because usually they block 3 hours for it and they always go over. So this time they smartly was like, why don't we just block 3.5 hours?
Yeah.
And then they were going to get a new episode of Abbott Elementary to round out the hours. So I guess they had to take it to the bottom somehow. They can probably juke the credits a little bit here or there to extend them a little bit. But yeah, he was just like, we've got time. And I heard Kimmel say backstage before he did that, the producers and people are saying, don't read that tweet. Don't do that. He's like, no, I'm going to do it. So he just did it.
Well, and he says that the John Cena gag, which was, so he comes out essentially naked, you know, with nothing but the envelope to block off his, you know, man stuff. He wasn't entirely naked. He was wearing a very small garment on the front and the back. But that was to honor, like, they wanted to mark the 50th anniversary of the Oscars streaker.
Right.
So that's kind of cool. But Kimmel says of all of the stuff on the show, that was the one that everyone was worried about the most. He said there were meetings and meetings and meetings, and then there were meetings about the size of the envelope, and they wanted to use like this giant,
comically huge one.
Yeah, to make sure that nothing could be revealed. So anyway, kudos to John Cena. That was pretty brave.
That's pretty fearless in that room, especially with, hey, all these people hold my entire career in their hands and I'm going to do this. It's like, ugh.
Good promotion, though, for Ricky Stenicki as well.
Yep.
So we're going to hear about that a little bit later.
The other good promotion was Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt doing a tribute to stunts in movies because they're both starring in The Fall Guy in a couple of months, which is obviously about stunts. But it was also a thing that's like, well, this is just making it glaringly obvious how there should be a stunts category at the Oscars, which many people have been calling for years. And then a few months ago, the Oscars are like, we're adding a category, casting. And everyone's like, what about the stunts? If anyone deserves Oscars, it's the stunt people. So at least they've recognized it in the show a little bit. Maybe one of these years we'll actually get a stunts Oscars, because that'd be cool.
Yeah, I can't. Now you mentioned it, I can't believe that's not a category.
Except the stunt will go to, you know, oh, a guy in Oppenheimer tripped and fell 3 feet or something like that. And then contrast it against, you know, Keanu Reeves falling down 4 flights of stairs twice.
I will say that I did enjoy the fact that this really wasn't a political show. Nobody got up on their soapbox.
Just documentary people, and they always do.
Yeah, and that's the whole, I mean, and you would expect that from somebody doing that sort of thing. But I liked how they just got up and did their thing. And I was so, so happy to see Godzilla Minus One win the best visual effects, because with a budget of under $15 million to make something that pretty much looked as good as anything else. Like, there were some rough edges when you watch it, but you sort of take that with a grain of salt, because you go, well, budget's $15 million. It's not $250 or $300 million.
And it must have looked a lot better than Ant-Man.
Yeah.
That one movie looked terrible.
Yeah, it did. It had some of it looked fantastic, but some of it was just awful. So I hope, and even like another one of the movies that was nominated for Best Visual Effects was The Creator, which is available on Disney Plus, and I've been meaning to get to that. But its budget was under $100 million. I think it was $97 million. So that's modest by Hollywood standards. I just hope it sort of signals to Hollywood, like, if we're going to do visual effects, maybe let's go for quality or some like more effects to enhance the story rather than just Let's add as many visual effects as possible and sacrifice the story.
Exactly.
Up next, I've got a couple of shows I want to tell you about. One of them I was really excited about, and now I have no idea what to make of it. And the other one wasn't really even on my radar, and now I'm super excited about it. You're listening to The Couch Potatoes. I'm Brett, he's Jeff, we are The Couch Potatoes. I've got two shows I want to discuss with you this week. Both of them debuted recently. One of them is great so far. The other, not so much. So let's start there, because I am burdened by glorious disappointment thus far with a show that I had previously flagged as something that I'm looking forward to for all of 2024. It's HBO's The Regime, starring Kate Winslet.
Since I became your chancellor, we have grown considerably as a country. It is time to show America and the world precisely what we are worth.
So two episodes have aired thus far for The Regime, and this is it takes place over the course of a year within the palace of a modern European authoritarian regime as it unravels. And Kate Winslet is the boss. She's the leader of this fictitious country. And the trailer, like, I didn't really know what to expect from this series, but the trailer made it look like it was going to be really starkly serious. And instead, it's far more comedic than I anticipated, but it just can't seem to figure out what it wants to be, at least not yet. So maybe reviewing it two episodes in, I can't deliver a verdict on it, but so far I don't know what to make of this show. Even the theme song kind of struck me. I mean, it's cool. And it, you know, fits the vibe of this fictitious European country, but it's almost like comedic, and it has some sinister tones in the theme song. So I don't know. What I do know is Kate Winslet is brilliant. Like,
she's always brilliant.
Yeah.
I've not watched it, but when have you ever seen her where she wasn't, you know, the best thing of whatever she's in?
Yeah.
Like Titanic. I sort of keep bringing up Titanic, but the dialogue in that movie is famously terrible, and she comes by far closest to selling it as something that sounds like words a human would say in real life.
Yeah, she is excellent, and she's wonderful to watch, and it looks like she's having a lot of fun, which is a huge contrast from her last show, The Mayor of Easttown, which was horrifically dark and sad and depressing. And, you know, she just looked defeated by the world and gave just another career performance. Every time she does something, it's like career performance by Kate Winslet, and she's having a blast. But yeah, it's just weird. It's weird. I don't really know what to think of it so far. I can't quite make up my mind, but I'm intrigued enough to continue watching it. Particularly, she's got this, I think it's called mycophobia. She's afraid of mold.
No.
To the point where she had the whole palace like renovated and scrubbed it clean, and
yikes.
And she like sometimes hides in a bubble, and she has a guy to follow her around to cleanse the air that she walks through. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of political satire in this, but yeah, I need more time to digest. So that's the show that's not quite so good. And then the one that wasn't on my radar, because I only heard this was coming a few weeks ago, it's a new show from Guy Ritchie, and it's called The Gentlemen.
Do you know what I admire about the British aristocracy? They're the original gangsters.
What's your name? Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
Your house is a testament to the synthesis of this culture.
Is he rich like me?
Refinement. With aggression.
All right, so in 2019, Guy Ritchie released a movie called The Gentlemen, starring Matthew McConaughey, Hugh Grant, Charlie Hunnam, Colin Farrell, Jeremy Strong, just to name a few. That was about a guy named Mickey Pearson, an American expatriate who became rich by building a highly profitable marijuana empire in London. And when word gets out he's looking to cash out of the business, it soon triggers an array of plots and schemes, including bribery and blackmail from shady characters who want to steal his domain. The television show, which debuted on March 7th, Yeah, centers on a guy named Eddie Horniman, who is played by Theo James, who unexpectedly inherits his father's sizable country estate, only to discover it's part of a cannabis empire. What's more, a host of unsavory characters from Britain's criminal underworld want a piece of the operation. Determined to extricate his family from their clutches, Eddie tries to play the gangsters at their own game. So similar reviews for the movie and the show, 75% for the movie, 70% for the show. Similar audience scores, 84% for the movie, 85% for the TV show. I confess I've only watched one of the eight episodes, but I loved it. Like, it felt like peak Guy Ritchie. It felt like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels or Snatch, which are just brilliant films. Just that staccato, awesome dialogue and violence and cool camera work and cool music. It's just a really slick, fun show. You heard the voice of Giancarlo Esposito in there. Yeah, I don't know how much he's going to be in this show, but yeah, I'm really digging this. And I kind of want to watch the movie now, although it looks like it's not available in any streaming platforms. I'm sure it was just on something a little while ago, maybe Netflix.
Don't you love that? That happens to me constantly. It's like, oh, I know this is on there. And then when you go to look for it, it's like, nope, it left like 2 weeks ago. And I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Now I want to watch it.
Yeah. I don't get it. It just seems like there should be some synergy there.
Yeah.
Like, people are watching the show, they're going to want to watch the movie, or vice versa. So, but it's super fun. You like Guy Ritchie stuff, right?
Yeah, for the most part. He had a dip for a few years where it seemed like he just made a bunch of crappy stuff. I guess maybe some of those Sherlock Holmes movies weren't great or whatever, but he had one a couple years ago with Statham, The Wrath of Man, about armored car heists and stuff like that, which I really, really enjoyed. So I never watched The Gentleman, the movie, I think mostly because I'm having a hard time accepting old Hugh Grant. I was like, Hugh Grant is young and handsome, and that's how I like my Hugh Grant, and I don't want to watch him as an old man. It's just like one of these weird things of me grappling with my own aging, where it's like, no, if I accept him getting older, then I have to accept me getting older. So
up next, there's a movie we forgot to mention last week that Jeff has seen. He says it's great. You're listening to The Couch Potatoes.
Welcome back to The Couch Potatoes. I'm Jeff, he's Brett, and John Cena and Zac Efron have a new comedy on Prime Video. It's called Ricky Stenicki.
My baby's going to be born 6 weeks early.
I was born 6 weeks early.
Oh, shit.
I want to know where the hell you guys were tonight. We called every hospital and there was no record of a Ricky Stenicki.
You know, all we did was tell one lie.
Hundreds and hundreds of times over many, many years.
If the truth does come out, my marriage is over.
What if we hire an actor to play Stenicki?
I want you to admit that Ricky Stenicki does not exist.
Hey, Mashpuka! Stenicki! Yes!
Yes! Ricky Stenicki came out last week, and I would have almost certainly ignored it from the title alone, but then I realized it's from Peter Farrelly of the Farrelly Brothers of Dumb and Dumber, Kingpin, and There's Something About Mary fame, and I was in, because those guys had three of the best comedies of the 90s, and were admittedly hit-and-miss after that, but even their lesser movies usually had a few good laughs. Me, Myself, and Irene, Shallow Hal, Stuck on You, The Heartbreak Kid, even their Three Stooges movie. So I was interested to see what they, or rather in this case, he, Peter, had cooking, and it's not bad. It does not hit the heights that he's hit before, but it's also nowhere near the worst. It's perfectly mid for the Farrellys, and if you have Prime Video, it's worth seeing for yourself. The premise is actually pretty good. Zac Efron and two actors I don't know play three friends in Providence, Rhode Island. It's always Providence with the Farrellys. They screw up a prank as a kid when they're kids, and they need a scapegoat, so they invent a kid called Ricky Stenicki, on whom they could throw the blame for everything that goes wrong. It works. It sets them off on this lifelong path of using Ricky for whatever they need. As grown-ups, it's usually to get some time away from their wives. Ricky lives far away, you know, oh, he's sick, we gotta go see him. And then they go to Atlantic City for a raucous weekend. That's where we start. That's when the troubles start piling on. They almost get caught in their lie, and yada, yada, yada. As we heard in the clip, they realize they need an actual physical human being to show up as Ricky Stenicki so their wives will believe that he actually exists. And this is where John Cena comes in. He's an actor that they have a chance chance meeting with. They hire him to be Ricky Stenicki at the bris of one of the friend's newborn son. And the first problem is Cena is a mess. He's a drunk and a moron, and they're very worried that he won't be able to pull this off. But Cena prides himself on his professionalism as an actor and does a masterful job. And that's where the big problems for the three friends really kicks in, is that he does too good a job. And he might actually be starting to believe that he is Ricky Stenicki. This threatens all their home lives as well as their jobs. Two of them are finance guys who work for William H. Macy, who really takes a shine to Stenicki. And then all hell kind of breaks loose, and, you know, Farrelly brother humor abounds. And that is the reason to watch. If you like any of those Farrelly movies, you can expect much the same here. And for all the hue and cry about, oh, you can't make jokes like that in this day and age, the truth is, no, a lot of stuff we used to joke about as a society is no longer acceptable. But people who are actually funny still know how to be funny in 2024. And that's what we have here. Now, you know, Farrelly comedy just isn't for everyone, but it never was. Efron can be very funny, Zac Efron, like in those Neighbors movies, he's funny. But here he kind of has to be the straight man a lot of the time, which I thought was a little too bad. He doesn't get to be as funny as we've seen him be before. Cena, though, is pretty great, and this is a role that Jim Carrey would have done amazingly well back in the day, and I think Cena fits the bill just fine. I'm not saying John Cena's as funny as Jim Carrey was in his heyday, but in this one he is. The Vacation Friends movies that Cena is in are not great, but generally he's pretty solid. He crushed his bit at the Oscars, as we mentioned. He had a fun small part in Barbie. He was in the show Peacemaker, one of the most fun shows of recent years. So the dude is everywhere lately. I'm sort of worried actually that we're going to be oversaturated with John Cena in the next year or two. But, you know, comedy is incredibly subjective. So don't blame me if you watch Ricky Stenicki and you don't like it. But I do think if you like these sorts of movies that these guys have made before, you'll have a good time. And I give Ricky Stenicki 3.5 couch cushions out of 5, Brett.
All right. I'll add that to the mile high pile of things I need to get to, because it does look funny, and I love the premise. Speaking of movies, it's a really busy weekend at the movies, although none of these, I believe, will turn out to be a hit. We've got 5 new movies at the theaters this weekend, so I'll just kind of run through them here. The first one is called Love Lies Bleeding. Its synopsis is quite simple: a romance fueled by ego, desire, and the American dream. And this one co-stars Kristen Stewart and Dave Franco. Ed Harris is in it as well as Jenna Malone. So I saw Kristen Stewart do an interview on that. She's pretty fired up about this movie. So that's one of them. The next one is called French Girl. And this stars Zach Braff and Vanessa Hudgens, and as well as Evelyne Brochu, who I guess is the French girl. And when I click on the synopsis for that, there's nothing. I can click on more info. I'm just on the Cineplex website, and it gives you anything. But yeah, looks like it's a love triangle kind of deal. And then there's one that I know you're interested, Jeff.
Yep.
And that's One Life.
Yeah, that stars Anthony Hopkins, and it's based on a true story of a guy who was a young man during World War II in Czechoslovakia, I believe, and he saves some kids who were sort of destined for a concentration camp, but he gets them to safety in England, and he just did it quietly under the radar, and it wasn't just him, he had some help or whatever. But then 50 years later, the BBC kind of, and his wife, and a news story came out, as like, hey, this is what happened 50 years ago, this guy, and the guy got some credit for it finally. And I guess this movie, obviously starring Anthony Hopkins, is about, it's set in the past and the present, and Anthony Hopkins plays the old man version of this guy, and there's somebody plays the young guy man version of him. There's a, his name is Nicholas Winton. And if you just go to YouTube and type in Nicholas Winton, you can see the actual BBC story about this guy. And it's pretty incredible. There was a viral video. It's really touching. And some of that stuff's in the trailer. So I saw that and I was like, ooh, I actually want to go see this. And Anthony Hopkins, he's 88 years old, I believe. And he's still getting her done. And he won an Oscar in 2021, I believe it was, for a movie called The Father, where he played an old man who had dementia. And that's an amazing performance in that. If you've never seen The Father, that one I highly recommend. But I think I will go see this One Life this week and report back next week.
Speaking of, just a sidebar, unrelated, but on the subject of guys who are getting older and still getting her done.
Yep.
Sir David Attenborough.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
97 years old. And I don't know how this did not land on my radar, because I always watch, whenever he's got a new, like, sort of Nature event, Duck. series, whether it's on Netflix or Prime or wherever, I'll watch it. Planet Earth 3.
Oh, really?
Debuted in the fall on BBC Earth.
Oh.
And I didn't catch wind of it. So,
can we get that channel? Is that a thing here?
I've got it. Yeah, I've got it. I think and I think it's on free trial right now, but they're rerunning it.
Hmm.
I think it's 6 or 8 episodes, so I'm excited to watch that, and I can't believe he's still going with these shows. By the way, just circling back to that movie French Girl, I'm just looking at its Rotten Tomatoes. 0% thus far.
Does that mean it's terrible or no one's seen it?
It means, well, it's only got 5 reviews.
Okay.
But I'm guessing that no one is going. And that's also listed as a limited release. So just make sure you check your listings. The listings I checked showed French Girl is going to be playing. The next one on the list is called The American Society of Magical Negroes. It's described as a fresh satirical comedy about a young man named Aaron who is recruited into a secret society of magical black people who dedicate their lives to a cause of utmost importance, making white people's lives easier.
I've seen the trailer for that. It's funny. And the point, they do that because it's like, when white people are relaxed, they don't give us a hard time. But if you make them nervous, the heat's going to come down on you, the black guy in the room kind of thing. So,
oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's where the satire comes in.
And then finally, we have a movie called Hey Victor. Described as 25 long years after his time in the limelight, former child actor Cody Lightning tries to revive his fortunes with a self-produced sequel to Smoke Signals in this smart, irreverent new comedy. So, yeah, lots of stuff out this weekend, but like I said, none of these, I think, are destined to become hits. But I think also the reason why they're unloading a lot of these movies is we just had Kung Fu Panda 4.
Yep.
Which did very well at the box office. We have Dune Part 2, which is doing very well.
Sucking up a lot of screen time.
And then as far as what's coming soon, we've got Ghostbusters Frozen Empire next week.
Yay.
We also have a movie that's set to debut next week, a scary movie called Immaculate. And that's actually probably going to end up being a bigger hit than they ever anticipated because it stars Sydney Sweeney, whose star is like, she's like rocket fuel right now.
Yeah.
She's managed to emerge from Madam Web. She was in that, but she's managed to emerge as like the true it girl of Hollywood right now. Godzilla X Kong is out on March 29th. And then Monkey Man starring Dev Patel.
That's a pretty wild looking trailer too.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, hell, I might have to go see that one.
Yeah. That comes out on April 5th.
He directed it as well.
Yes, he did. And he hurt himself plenty of times.
Oh, really?
Oh, and before I forget, we mentioned that there is a movie that is missing from this weekend's list. This weekend, there's a movie out called Arthur the King, starring Mark Wahlberg and a dog. And it looks really cool and really inspirational. It's out in the States. For some reason, it does not appear to be opening anywhere in Canada. I can't find a shred of evidence that this is playing in Canada. So just keep your eye out for that for somewhere down the road. You are listening to The Couch Potatoes.
Welcome back to The Couch Potatoes. I'm Jeff. He's Brett. And this week was the 40th anniversary of what I consider the best comedy of all time.
We wish them great success on their North American tour. And so say all of us. Tap into America!
This is Spinal Tap and their song Tonight I'm Gonna Rock You Tonight came out in 1984, which was a pretty amazing year for movies, Brett. Ghostbusters, Beverly Hills Cop, both of those getting sequels this year. Indiana Jones got a sequel last year. Gremlins, The Karate Kid, Footloose, and on and on and on. 84 was a great year. Spinal Tap, of course, follows the misadventures of a very clueless British heavy metal band on its tour of America to promote their forthcoming album.
Let's talk about your reviews a little bit regarding Intravenous to Milo. This tasteless cover is a good indication of the lack of musical invention within.
That's nitpicking, isn't it?
The gospel according to Spinal Tap. This pretentious, ponderous collection of religious rock psalms is enough to prompt the question, what day did the Lord create Spinal Tap, and couldn't he have rested on that day too?
Never heard that one. That's a good one.
The review you had on Shark Sandwich, which was merely a two-word review, just said, sandwich.
Where'd they print that?
Where'd they print that?
That's not real, is it?
You can't print that.
Michael McKean is band leader David St. Hubbins. Christopher Guest is guitarist Nigel Tufnell. And Harry Shearer is bassist Derek Smalls, directed by Rob Reiner. This is Spinal Tap, is one of the original mockumentaries, maybe not the first, but definitely the one that really made people take notice of the genre. And a lot of sitcoms, of course, have followed it in its footsteps, and some movies. Guest, of course, went on to make a number of mockumentary feature films like Waiting for Guffman, Best in Show, and A Mighty Wind. And presenting the band as a real thing, of course, only makes it all the more funnier.
If you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board. 11, oh, 11,
and most
11,
of the
and then
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
It's a good send-up of rock stars, and a lot of real-life rock stars have indeed admitted that they'd gone through periods in their careers that were strikingly similar, whether it was getting lost backstage or having to play low-rent gigs like army bases. A lot of people also thought it was a real band, and then they became a real band. They've put out real albums and toured. Of course, the songs are novelty comedy rock, but still. It's also one of the best DVDs ever, with a second movie's worth of deleted scenes and a very funny commentary of the actors in character. And right now, they're actually shooting a sequel. I have no idea how that's going to turn out, but those guys are all pretty funny, so I'm optimistic. If it does suck, though, at least we'll always have the original.
Do you have any artificial plates or limbs?
Not really, no.
Oh, shooting a sequel. That feels like dangerous territory.
40 years, and you know, they're not young men anymore, right? So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, they're improv comics by trade, and like we saw Michael McKean on Better Call Saul, he's still very talented. So, hopefully, these guys, and I mean, Harry Shearer's been on The Simpsons all these years, so they're still. I don't know if they're going to have the fastball at the same degree they had 40 years ago, but I'm cautiously optimistic. We'll see.
And in terms of the DVD, is it a Criterion?
Nope. It's just a DVD. When I first got my first DVD player, when I bought it used for $250, they were like, we'll throw in any movie you want. And instead of buying something that would show off the quality of this new DVD technology, I just got the Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
And then I was so excited because it's like 90 minutes of a comedy of them in character on the commentary and another hour's worth of deleted scenes stitched together in chronological order. So it feels like another movie. It's a lot of good content there if you're still buying hard copies.
You know, that could actually be a potential topic that we do. Like, what's the best DVD Blu-ray, because I think of that makes me think of Jaws, which has one of the best
making of
documentaries I think ever. And of course, I mean, the Lord of the Rings, when we talked about this recently, those are, I feel like it's almost unfair to count them, because they have like what is it, 12 hours of special features or additional features in those Blu-rays.
Yeah, and there was one where Peter Jackson goes, they're shooting some insert shot for the extended version of Return of the King. And he goes, this might be the only time that we're still shooting scenes for a movie that's already won the Oscar for Best Picture.
Really?
Because the Oscars were in February and they're doing this in the summer for that DVD to come out in November or whatever it was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah. And that's the thing. I want to go back and rewatch those, but 12 hours.
Yeah, I know.
It takes long enough to watch the movies.
I can't remember the last time I actually went through all the special features on a DVD. Maybe some of the Fast and the Furious making of stuff or whatever, because they used to, not so much anymore, but like Fast 5, 6, and 7, they were doing crazy stunts.
Right? Yeah, and when it comes to extras now, and you can still get extras, and even Disney Plus often has a tab for various titles, extras, but they're all short burst. It's like 2 minutes max.
Right.
Because they know that people's
Attention spans
are gone, and they're not going to watch a 55-minute feature like that anymore. That's all the time we've got. I'm Brett. He's Jeff. We are the Couch Potatoes. Remember, if it requires getting up off the couch, don't bother.